Right now, it's time for Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm really delighted to be bringing you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll be speaking with Dr. Jane Goodall. No, I'm serious. Jane Goodall. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Davy Graham with Buffalo here on Talking Animals. This is Davy Graham with Buffalo, an animal tune of sorts, as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be hearing from today's guest, Dr. Jane Goodall, whose latest book is Hope for Animals and Their World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink. We'll address the new book and some of the many success stories it spotlights, her outlook on what sort of shape the animal world and the world at large is in, chimps, of course, and a host of other topics when we hear a conversation with Dr. Jane Goodall in a few moments here on Talking Animals. We'll also give away a copy of the new book toward the end of the show and name that animal tune. Right now, though, it's time for animal news items and announcements. Every so often, for years now, I've tried to mention the Animal Rescue Site. It's a website, theanimalrescuesite.com. Site, in the course, in this case, spelled S-I-T-E. And if you go there at least once a day, and the more the merrier, because through an arrangement with corporate sponsors and advertisers, each visit that you make donates food to abandoned and neglected animals at various facilities in exchange for that sort of advertising. So, let people know. Good thing to do around the holidays, but all year round, really. Go to the animalrescuesite.com. It takes 5 seconds, maybe 15, and you're helping animals every day that way, just while you're sitting at your computer. Also, from the SPCA Tampa Bay, it's Happy Holidays and Cattails. And by which they mean for the month of December, the adoption fee for a hallway cat or kitten, which you can't really describe the price here on the air at WMNF, but the point is, if you donate some items from their wish list that they need to help the animals, then that pretty much covers your adoption fee. There's all kinds of animals, all kinds of other things you can find out about by calling the SPCA. Tampa Bay at 727-586-3591, or just go to their website, spcatampabay.org. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Paul F. Tompkins with a piece called Alternative Pets on today's Comedy Corner here on Talking Animals.
People have their alternative pets on their person. People walking around with animals on their body. See a guy who's got an iguana hanging out up there on his shoulder? See another person with a crazy cockatiel just hanging out? And I guess you're supposed to have some reaction to these people. You know, I guess what they want you to say is something like, well, pardon me, sir. Is that a bird on your shoulder? Well, you must be one fascinating individual. Your personality is not at all manufactured. I say, what if we were to exchange addresses and became pen pals? That way I could collect your letters in a bound volume entitled, My Correspondence with the Most Interesting Person Alive. Working hard for you. That's great. You can have any animal that you want, you know, because we have dominion over the beasts of the fields and all, you know, but here's the thing. Even animals need some alone time, okay? How about that, you know? Maybe the lizard would like to sit at home, play on the rock for a while, you know. Maybe the bird would like to play with the bell, look in the mirror for a little bit. Maybe they don't have to come with you on all your jackass errands. How about that? Leave them alone for a minute. Come on, Cecil, we're going down to the bank so everybody can see your crazy eyes. Woo!
All right. That was Paul F. Tompkins with a piece called Alternative Pets, taken from a Comedy Central performance. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs, including our last show with puppy mill expert Bill Smith. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page. We'd like you to become our friend, our fan, actually, in that case, and our Twitter account, and we'd love you to follow us. Plus, there's a place to subscribe to our email newsletter so we can keep you posted on forthcoming guests, program news, and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to hear from today's guest, Dr. Jane Goodall, so let me reiterate that her new book is Hope for Animals and Their World, How Endangered Species Are Being Rescued from the Brink, which I imagine will be considered a prize gift this holiday season. And I also want to mention that the website for the Jane Goodall Institute is janegoodall.org. Otherwise, as a pioneering, heroic, and legendary figure for about four decades or so, I think Dr. Goodall truly needs no introduction. So, in a conversation recorded yesterday, this is Dr. Jane Goodall on Talking Animals.
Well, let's welcome to Talking Animals Dr. Jane Goodall. Thank you so much, Dr. Goodall, for joining us today on Talking Animals. It's a real privilege and pleasure.
Well, it's very nice to be talking with you, too. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things I loved most about the new book is the way it functions really is something of a soothing tonic. By that I mean that sometimes those of us who care tremendously about animal welfare can get deeply discouraged by things like the scope of factory farming or puppy mills or countless other issues. But this book is brimming with success stories and tales of folks across the globe really, truly rescuing animals from extinction. So this kind of commitment and results are uplifting and can only inspire and reinvigorate, you know, I'm sure, all readers. But what do these stories also do for you and your outlook? Clearly they must energize you, but what else did they do as you were compiling them?
Well, of course they energize me, and I'm one of the perks of this terrible life of travel is that I get to actually meet some of these extraordinary people. And so one of the things that's happened is that I have gained a lot of knowledge that I wouldn't have had before.
Sure.
And that's always good. I love learning new things. And it's sort of given me a new window to look on a lot of conservation projects. But, you know, its main reason was, as exactly as you say, I meet so many people who've lost hope, many people who've given up simply because they feel it's hopeless. And it's not hopeless, you know, that we certainly have destroyed vast chunks of the planet and we're still doing it. But at least we're coming together to review climate change in Copenhagen, and there's a lot of people with a lot of goodwill there.
Absolutely. No, that's well, that's the thing. And really, in terms of hope and inspiration, as you know, just in recent days, as I had sort of spread the word that you were going to be my guest on Talking Animals, I heard from just really a staggering number of people who were just enormously enthusiastic, for whom you are a longtime hero, and or they heard you speak somewhere over the years, and it you know, truly changed their life. When someone's had that profound of an impact on so many lives, I can't help wonder what sort of people have had that kind of profound impact on your life. I wonder if you might share two or three who might particularly fit that description.
Well, the first one I would mention is my mother, because she was a completely extraordinary person, and I think the way she raised me has an awful lot to do with who I am and how I see the world. So
sure.
I would absolutely mention her.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of tied in with her is her mother, my grandmother. So, you know, those two together gave me a lot of the determination that I have, and that never give upness and that sort of thing.
Sure.
So that's one. Two, I would have to say Louis Leakey.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he gave me this opportunity. Most unlikely, a young girl with no university credentials of any sort, new to Africa. I mean, crazy, really, but he had faith.
Yeah.
So him.
Sure.
Somebody who has very, very much inspired me, that's nothing to do with animals per se, is Muhammad Yunus, who started the Grameen Bank.
Oh, right, yeah.
I think he's done more to help the poorest of the poor than anyone. And we know that once people come out of poverty, then they can start thinking about things like attitudes to animals and things.
Sure.
So if it's three people, I'll mention those, but I've got to add one more.
Okay.
Or maybe two. One was the dog I grew up with, Rusty, who taught me so much.
Okay.
And the other would be David Greybeard, who really introduced me to the world of chimps, the first one who lost his fear.
Sure. All right, well, that's a pretty good list of three that now that we're at five, so that's very, very good. But I just sort of want to go back and forth, of course, to the book and then other things as well as we talk here, Dr. Goodall. So among the things the new book does sort of indirectly and kind of cumulatively is serve as a reminder that those who might be kind of inherently anti-zoo may ironically be overlooking how crucial zoos have been.
Yes.
To the rescue and revival of certain breeds and the virtue they've been to many species. I mean, what's your own view of zoos at this point, and how might that view have changed over the years?
Obviously, I'd rather see animals out in the wild. I mean, there's no question, you know. Sure. But there's wild and wild. There's the wilderness where they're safe, like Gombe or the big national parks,
mm-hmm.
that are properly policed, and just a few remote areas where people haven't yet interfered.
Yeah.
But so much of the wilderness today is causing animals to live in jeopardy and fear. I think of the chimpanzees across many parts of Africa where they're losing their forests, they're hunted for food, they're caught in poachers' snares, you know. And then you think, well, one of the really good zoos today where the animals have a good social group, they have space, they have caring keepers, very often an adoring public, you know,
right.
And also have the opportunity, although they don't know it, to serve as ambassadors for their wild, endangered relatives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think there's an important place for a really good zoo. It's helping, as you say, with conservation, and it can do an awful lot for educating young children.
Sure.
If it's a good zoo. If it's a bad zoo, it doesn't do any of these things.
Right, and I guess apart from, you know, some might say, you know, sort of AZA membership, I mean, I guess that's the other thing is how do you necessarily, you know, recognize or measure a good zoo, since we know there's certainly a lot of not-so-good zoos out there.
Yeah, well, I have to stick mainly to the chimpanzees, which is mostly what I see, because, you know, I'm not thrilled to go to zoos, but I go to have a look and see how the chimps are doing.
Sure.
And another good thing here is our chimpanzoo program, which has been helping to improve environments for chimps in bad zoos all over the world.
Yeah. Well, let me just let folks know that this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Dr. Jane Goodall, whose latest book is Hope for Animals and Their World. This is in a conversation recorded yesterday. So, speaking of chimps, which I can hardly see how we can't get delve more deeply into that quickly here. So I gather you still travel to Gombe, you know, at least once or twice a year, is that?
Yes, twice a year. It's usually very short, but at least I get out in the forest and see at least some of my old friends, although most of my original chimpanzee acquaintances are gone.
Sure, yeah, I wondered that too, if that feels like you're sort of, you know, reconnecting of sorts, or you know, when you return, are you looking more at the current chimps and their habitat, or are you also in some way seeing, you know, David Greybeard and others in a sense from the earliest days?
Well, my last really longtime friend from the early days died 4 years ago, and that was Fifi.
Yeah.
So it's the offspring of those original ones that I knew so well who are there now.
Sure.
And a lot of them I don't know. I don't know the young chimps going twice a year. That's not possible.
Right.
But
right.
The forest is there, the waterfall, the peak. I can go to these places and just feel what it was like and get, again, a sense of that magic of wonder and excitement of what's out there, you know?
Sure, sure. And even just those brief visits, it sounds like, are still, you know, kind of a thrilling, you know, return, even however briefly, for you to...
It's like renewing of one's spirit.
Sure.
Charging
sure.
the batteries, whatever term one likes to use.
Right, right. No, absolutely. I mean, that connection you have there, obviously, is strong, but sort of reinvigorated when you are there. And Dr. Goodall, this might be considered, I guess, somewhat off topic, but perhaps not, given sort of the dark, aggressive side of chimps that you did identify early on in your study. I guess I'm curious about your reaction to those incidents of captive chimps who, unfortunately, sometimes, viciously attack their humans. I mean, there's certainly a high-profile instance within the last year, and even there was news about that today. The Connecticut prosecutors, I guess, decided not to file criminal charges against the animal's owner, the one that's kind of been in the news lately. But just wondering, just sort of what your view of when those things happen.
We've been campaigning for years to ban the use of chimpanzees as, quote, pets. Mm-hmm. They're not pets, they're wild animals.
Yeah.
I know only too well from the wild that they're unpredictable. You know, there can be a sudden burst of aggression, even in the wild.
Sure.
And they shouldn't be pets, then. They don't belong in people's houses.
Right.
And people, sadly, often because they don't understand or they're misinformed, they get these cute babies. And, of course, by the time that cute baby is 6, 7, it's a potentially dangerous creature.
Yeah.
And there should be a ban. They shouldn't be selling them.
Sure.
It's just wrong.
Right, right. And, it just seems like you say, I mean, people respond to them when they're small and cute. Some, I guess, just don't realize just how incredibly powerful and, like you say, unpredictable.
Yeah,
you know, as adults, they're likely to become. So.
Yeah, they are. I mean, you know, it's if you compare it to the cases per year of brutalizing human beings. I mean, human beings brutalized by other human beings.
Yeah,
the chimp attacks are nothing.
Sure,
but there aren't that many pet chimps, so
right.
The numbers would go up.
Of course. Of course. And also, sort of on a related note, Dr. Goodall, I'm speaking to you too, not far from where Save the Chimps, the sanctuary established by the late Dr. Carol Noon is located, and actually a few hours away is another Florida sanctuary, the Center for Great Apes. In your view, what role do these facilities play in the life of chimps that, you know, are captive and have been captive for, you know, one reason or another?
Well, they're very, very important, and fortunately, there are more people setting up sanctuaries around the world. You know, we in Africa, the Jane Goodall Institute has the biggest sanctuary in Africa, Chimpongo. Over 140 chimpanzees who mainly are there because their mothers were shot for the bushmeat trade.
Wow.
And across Europe, sanctuaries are being set up for ex-entertainment chimps, ex-lab chimps, and if those sanctuaries aren't there, the long-term future for these wretched, abused chimpanzees is pretty grim.
Yeah.
And it's expensive.
And,
I mean, this is the big problem.
Right, is how to underwrite
the money.
The cost of these things. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's our big concern in Africa is raising the money to run the sanctuary and protect the wild chimps and their forests.
Yeah, and that's and as those numbers grow and the costs deepen, yeah, it just gets to be a huge challenge. And while we're on the subject of chimps and chimp sanctuaries, I'm wondering if you had an opportunity to read a book came out this year by Charles Siebert called the Wachula Woods Accord, which sort of among many other things actually chronicled his extended encounter with this retired circus chimp, Roger, at the Center for Great Apes.
And I haven't read the book. I've heard about it.
Yeah, well,
I've been too busy writing books to
what's that?
Be able to read very much.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, he does actually wonderful, every few months or so, does wonderful New York Times Magazine cover stories about the various animal issues and stuff. So I just thought that might have been one that you might have...
I will. I'll get round to it. I have it.
Sure.
Somebody gave it to me, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a big, big stack in that category.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, this is Talking Animals, and Duncan Strauss, in a conversation recorded yesterday, I'm speaking with Dr. Jane Goodall, whose new book is Hope for Animals and Their World. And let's talk a little bit about hope. I mean, obviously a vitally important feeling to you, and you know, there's your reasons for hope, which I'd like to come back to in a moment, and by my count, at least three of your books, including this latest one, have hope in the title. You carry with you on your constant travel symbols of hope. I mean, to what extent have you always been brimming with hope, and to what extent has it been a learned behavior, let's say, to borrow a phrase?
I think it was part of my upbringing to be optimistic and to hope for the best. And I think, you know, when you lose hope, that's when you become completely apathetic, because people lose hope and stop taking action.
Sure.
You know, and the lucky thing is that I do have hope. Otherwise, I don't think I could go around talking about hope and writing books about hope.
And how, over the years, Dr. Goodall, has that, you know, fluctuated greatly? Has it always been at a pretty constant level? And just as you've done things and traveled things and accomplished what you've done, that you know, even if you might have lost hope in a certain area over here, in a different area over here, you've more than sort of boosted that hope? Or?
Well, I can't really answer that. It goes up and down. You know, you get a blow and you think, oh, it's hopeless. But then
sure. You
meet somebody or you hear something or you sort of gird your loins and realize, well, there is hope after all, but we've got to work harder. We've got to influence more people.
Sure.
But somehow, I mean, that's why I work with youth so much.
Yeah.
To create new generations that will be better stewards than we've been, that'll have different values.
Sure. Well, I think along those lines, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the Roots and Shoots and sort of, you know, what the program has evolved into since you launched it some 18, 19 years ago.
Mm. Well, actually, it hasn't really, I mean, it's grown hugely.
Yeah.
It's in 114 countries now.
Right.
It always had the three components.
Yeah.
It always involved young people choosing projects to make the world better, one for people, one for animals, one for the environment. It's evolved into having rather a strong theme of learning to live in peace and harmony with each other and with us and the natural world. And
yeah.
and it's all ages now, with increasing number of adults wanting to form groups.
Sure. And it really does seem like from people I, again, have heard from in recent days when again, people were alerted to the fact that you were a guest on the show, there's a huge contingent of young people who are truly moved and inspired by you and of course, whether it's directly by Roots and Shoots or just, you know, hearing you speak or just knowing of your work.
Well, that is what's so exciting. And, you know, to be able to walk into a class of high school students in, say, an inner city area where you've got all the dreadlocks and gang members and stuff,
mm-hmm.
and be greeted almost like a pop star, I mean, that is absolutely extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenon. I don't really understand it too well, but let's make use of it, all that energy and that goodwill and, you know,
sure.
sort of engagement with something that's so positive.
Sure. Well, among other things, I got to think that helps, you know, fortify any even minimally lagging hope on your part, just to feel like, my goodness, look at this auditorium full of young people who, you know, are ready to go out and do all kinds of great work inspired
yeah.
by you.
And they do go out and do it, and it's all over the world, you know.
Yeah.
We have our Roots and Shoots Youth Leadership Councils now, and we get them together, and my goodness, you see the world changing before your eyes, or at least the plans to change it, which they're actually working on.
Sure.
So it's very, very exciting to me, this program.
Yeah. Well, this I think we're sort of nearing the end of our time here, Dr. Goodall, but I'd just be curious, with all the travel, and I guess it's still upwards of 300 days a year, from what I gather.
Something like that.
Yeah, and so I guess I'd be interested to know, like, what, you know, just sort of as a prototypical day, like what would be a really great day when you're on the road, and what would be a really great favorite day on those all too rare days where you're not traveling, where you're home?
Well, when I'm home, as I am right now,
yeah.
just for today, I'm gone tomorrow, but it's just so wonderful to have the same room, my own belongings, to be able to write, because I love writing. I have too little time for it.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to go out with the dog. You know, my sister has three dogs, and one of them is kind of special. And to go out around the cliffs where I grew up and see that nothing much has changed, and the trees I looked out of my window at still here, so that's a day at home.
Sure.
And a day on the road, the good days, well, I suppose it's meeting an auditorium of children like we just talked about, or, you know, there are times when I get out into nature, like seeing the migration of the sandhill cranes, and learning and being out in nature at the same time is wonderful.
Sure. And along those lines, I'm just wondering, I mean, there were just, you know, at least a few dozen just, you know, amazing animal success stories in this new book, and they're really, you know, spanning a huge array of species and really traversing the globe. A number have really stayed with me. I just, you know, either because they're particularly fascinating or improbable or profound. I'm wondering, you know, are there, you know, similarly, like, at least a few of those stories that just have stayed with you, you know, particularly powerfully?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, one that I love is the Black Robin of New Zealand that was restored when there was only one male and one female left.
Yeah, the chips were really down at
that
point.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Just amazing. And I love the story of the whooping cranes that have been taught a new migration by following an ultralight.
Yeah.
That sticks with me because I went up in the ultralight and it was magic.
Yeah, it sounded like just a magical experience, but also just, again, just sort of the inventiveness of sort of solving, you know, a problem with the species.
Yeah, that's right. It's our people's determination. I will not let this species vanish.
Yeah.
And people coming together and just ordinary people and kids and, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of that's on the book's website. It was, the book got too long, so the Jane Goodall Hope for Animals website has a lot of those people stories in it.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. I mean, the book is chock full and again, really a sort of a great collection of tales, just generally, and certainly maybe as we approach the holidays, and maybe as some of us are struggling with not as much hope as we might have felt a year or so ago at this time for one reason or another. So I think that might be exactly the right place to leave this conversation. Dr. Jane Goodall, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals, and of course, just your immense and amazing heroic work over many, many years' time.
Well, thank you, and it's been a great pleasure talking to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Dr. Jane Goodall. One more time, the website for the Jane Goodall Institute is janegoodall.org, and also for the Roots and Shoots program that we discussed there, it's Roots and Shoots, and is spelled out rootsandshoots.org. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a copy of Dr. Goodall's new book, Hope for Animals and Their World, which I actually bought because I just thought we should be giving away one to our one of our Talking Animals listeners. So that'll go to the first person who calls in at 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on WMNF.
My mother said, my little pet, you ought to learn the alphabet. So in my soup I used to get all the letters of the alphabet. I learned them all from A to Z. And now my mother's giving me animal crackers in my soup. Monkeys and rabbits loop the loop. Gosh, oh gee, but I have fun swallowing.
Okay, let's see what we got. We got a couple of calls here, and otherwise we'll just keep going. Hi, you're on WMNF. Can you name that animal, Tim? No? Okay, cool. Well, all right, we'll proceed. More calls are coming in. But we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. The program airs twice a month, specifically the first and second Wednesday of each month. So we'll return Wednesday, January 6th. Hope you'll join me then. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I also want to thank Sheila and Sam here at WMNF for production assistance with the interview we recorded yesterday. And now we got a full bank of phone. Hi, you're on WNF. Do you, can you name that animal tune?
Animal Crackers?
Yeah. Who's this? What's your first name?
John.
John. Okay, John. You are our winner indeed, and you will get a copy of Jane Goodall's new book, Hope for Animals and Their World. So stay tuned. I'll come back and get your information.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So, as we were saying, I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Happy holidays to you and yours. We'll, again, talk to you again on Wednesday, January 6th at 11:30 a.m. right here on WMNF Tampa. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This is Nico Case with I'm an Animal on WMNF Tampa. Best wishes to you and yours for the holidays. Thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2010. You could say